Saffron Ballad, making sense of it all.
So there's lots in the media and in the news, obviously, about young people getting worse and worse and worse in terms of violence and gangs and all this sort of thing, and respect for elders has been lost and all this sort of thing. But is it really actually as bad as they say, or is it just that we're noticing it more? Does that make sense? Were in the 50s and 60s and 70s and 80s, were young people exactly the same? The only difference is the media have swooped on it and made it a bigger issue. I don't know. I wasn't there in the 50s, 60s, or 70s, but I know some of you guys were. How was it?
I wasn't able to read at that age. Yeah. You want to go back to the 30s or 40s.
Yeah. Would you say it's got worse?
Well, the thing is, yeah, the media in those days was just like two or three papers and two channels on TV. And TV? Sorry. That black and white box you had in the corner. Oh, yeah. Nowadays, you know, the media is an industry, and they seem to grab hold of issues and hold on to them. And the issue this year is basically counting how many kids have been killed in knife crime or whatever. There's a running total that they're trying to do better than last year from a media point of view.
Yeah, but it wouldn't be an issue if it wasn't so outstanding. Like, if you can compare it to the years before, previously, this year's obviously seen a rise because you can see that the statistics. Yeah. Obviously, the media has picked up on it.
Yeah.
And because of that, it's now a talking point.
But do you think because it's in the media, it's encouraging kids to do it?
I think that's part of the problem. But it's obviously not the main problem, but it is part of it, isn't it? It actually does escalate it to a degree and brings it into... I think what we've talked about before with young people, I think part of the difference between now and 50s, 60s is the much bigger breakdown of the family.
There was all the sort of modern rockers and that sort of thing. There's always been divisions in sort of young people. So is it actually any different what we've got now?
Yeah, because it was what was influencing those... cultural groups of kids. I think it's different now because the thing that's influencing kids now is the gang, the gangster, the American
rap stuff.
Yeah, it's like that.
So during the 50s, though, like, you know, when Howard was still an old man, the level of violence was just, you know, like fisticuffs type thing. Not absolutely having no care whether you're killing someone or not.
But surely there were things like that bad. I know it wasn't quite as late, but there were films like, if you look at Clockwork Orange, that's a film about youth violence and gangs and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's the future.
That was science fiction.
So do you think that's
highly prophetic?
Do you think that's actually...
And that was banned from television because it was too shocking, but now it's normal.
Well, it was banned in the cinema. In fact, the director himself banned it because he thought it was having an effect.
And in fact, that is sort of the level of violence that you're seeing.
You think that's actually what we're at now?
To a degree. Not in quite the same sort of language.
I read somewhere that there was a 9-year-old, there was a school that saw there were people around the age of 9 that carry knives, and they were asked why, and they said, we need them for protection. Mm. Now, do you think they're actually, or does anyone think they actually do, they're actually in an environment where they do need it for protection, or they're being made to think?
Yeah, I would agree with that.
That they need it for protection. I don't know if anyone...
Well, Johnny, do you feel you need a knife when you go out?
Oh, well, basically, I won't lie, the thought has crossed, I think, everyone my age's mind, yeah. Because we're fed by the media so much that it's dangerous out there for people my age. It crosses your mind, oh, maybe I should have some sort of protection or something like that. Obviously go through your head, and some people latch onto those and do assume that it's better to prevent it by taking a knife. But really, if there's no... It's not as bad as the media make out. Like, the threat for an average youngster is almost like no threat. No danger at all, really.
Depends
what
where in London
where you're going,
your route home is. I mean, if you go to school in South London and you live in South London, then you have to go through, like, I don't know.
Postcode. I don't think there's not been well known any stories where carrying a knife has got you out of any. I haven't heard any people I know of or know of any people that have.
I think
there's
always been a history, actually. I mean, even in the 40s, which is even before my time. there were Kosh boys, and there were the sort of like the heavy Deep East End people would carry cutthroat razors and stuff.
Yeah.
And also that's the same in Scotland, in Glasgow, there's always been there carrying swords and knives. It goes way back.
Was it the intent to kill, though?
No, I just think it was a sort of a, again, it was a protection thing and a macho gang thing then.
Yeah.
But it seems to have spread out of that into maybe a bigger area of youth now. And again, the media actually has probably expanded it to a wider group of young people, I think. But also together with the breakdown of the family.
Yeah, because it's a lot more innocent in the 50s. You know, West Side Story, all they did is dance around each other.
I don't think that was based on real life.
Someone did die at the end of that story.
What was that?
Although in America,
someone was shot at the end.
Yeah,
well, in America, they did. I mean, the 50s was a sort of a time when all this stuff did start festering. You had zip guns in America, like gas guns. These kids used to make themselves that were quite lethal.
Really?
That wasn't, see, when you were talking about it, I was actually thinking, mate, like, it's organised crime and all these, like, mobster hits and everything. But was it, like, kids that we see today, like, that sort of age?
Well, it was young kids, but it was, and I don't know what triggered it then. I mean, you've got to think also, the breakdown of the family happened earlier in America than it did over here. So I think a lot of those things that happened over there...
So you're saying there is a lack of a father's influence.
Very often so. Then obviously it doesn't hold that anybody that's brought up without a father is going to have those sort of problems. Yeah. But I think that does happen quite a lot.
I think, like we've said before, it's about discipline and...
role models.
And having role models and having the father figure that will instill discipline and the lack of that sort of thing with kids.
Anyway, sort of bringing it up to... present day, we have a sort of a story. We have a guest here, Lydia, whose nephew has been involved in this sort of gang culture, and she was telling us this story a couple of weeks ago in church, and it was a fascinating story. So I don't know if you just want to start talking and we can sort of get in your way every now and again.
Yes, well, it was one evening when just before going to bed you had that phone call, and nighttime phone call just before bed is always a worrying one. And of course it was, at the end of the line was my sister, who said my nephew was in hospital, who had just been stabbed. And for a moment it was just that silence. It's that dreaded news that you hear, a mother's dread, a father's dread, my child has been stabbed. And cut a long story short, went to he had obviously been out with some friends, and the irony, they'd been to watch a theatre production which was about anti-knife violence, where some of his friends had been in anti-knife violence, and he was in there, and when they came out they were attacked by some other young guys from another postcode, another area. And he was more or less left for dead, hemorrhaging, whatever, stabbed several times, knives and bottles, and left for dead. Anyway, I went to see him in the hospital a day later, 2 days later, it must be 2 days later. It was a touch-and-go situation, the hospital had said, and when I went, I was expecting the worst, but I was really quite amazed how well he looked physically, considering what he had been through. And I heard the day before,
he
was just 16. I heard the day before, if you'd seen him you wouldn't have been able to look at him. So already I thought, miracle that he's alive. Anyway, as I walked in there, there were a whole posse, so to speak, of young people, as they call themselves, which, to be honest, I felt angry that they were all there, thinking that this was the cause of this, and why are you all here, you know, why are you here, what do you think this is? And as always in hospitals, only two or three people allowed at the bedside, so a number of us were in the waiting room, lots of young boys and girls, 16, 17, 15-year-olds, and my nephew's mother, some relatives of mine, myself, and started talking, and managed to say to them that what is all this about, what is this new youth culture, and I managed to say to them, you know, this has got to stop, and it's in your hands, you're the young people, you've got to try and stop this. And they were saying they couldn't. Of course, there's a lot of peer pressure around. Once you start in down that road, it's a cycle. You have to continue. You have to live up to be, yes, I carry a knife, and yes, I will attack if I have to, etc., etc. Have to live up to the image. And the worst thing about it is it was obvious that they didn't want the police to be involved with this because they wanted to take the law into their own hands. They wanted vengeance. So as soon as my nephews were, that would have been the next step, that they would take vengeance. And they were saying about how they were going to take vengeance, and they didn't want to tell the police, because if they told the police, whoever was involved would only get a few years in prison and they'd be out again. This was the feeling of the youth on the whole. And they were just bent on vengeance, and nothing anybody said was going to stop them, at which point the mother broke down and she just couldn't bear the thought of this was going to happen if her son came out of here. And somehow I thought this was going nowhere, and I was just suddenly just felt I had to do something. And the only thing I felt capable of doing at the time was praying, which was not the thing that anybody was expecting to happen. The waiting room, I don't know who was around, and nurses or whatever, and I just stood up more or less and said, look, we're going to pray. So they must have thought, pray, is this woman mad or something? Where's she come from? Which planet is this woman from, you know? And anyway, I said, I don't know if you ever pray, and I'd like you to respect the God who I'm going to pray to now, the God and his son is Jesus Christ, who I believe in. We're going to pray. I said, I'd like you just to bow your head and respect this prayer. And I was just somehow led to just pray for the youth who were there, and especially for the young man who was adamant that he would not go to the police, and he wanted to take this into his hand, because he was not going to have his friend almost dead and somebody just going to prison for a few years. He was going to do whatever it needed, and obviously it was going to, next time we're going to go even further, and of course you know what that means, that the person would be dead. So anyway, I prayed, and I prayed for the young people, and I prayed also that they would go back to church, that they would find a church, because I really feel that is a problem with youth today. Many of them today now do not go to church, mothers and fathers, who, from my culture and particularly, who have been brought up in church, children no longer go to church, and I think that that is a major problem. Nothing about Sunday school, nothing about Jesus, nothing about praying, whatever, and I prayed that they would find a church, they would go back to church, and they would think about this situation that was just taking mothers and fathers, sons and daughters even, just swiping them out of the world for no reason whatsoever. And I prayed, and after the prayer there was a real hush in the room. Nobody spoke. The young man who was the main young man who was adamant that he was going to take vengeance had tears in his eyes, and nobody spoke. And I really don't know what the Spirit of God just came over me and made me do this. I'm sure it wasn't planned, because originally I was quite angry that these young people were there, and I felt, you know, that was the reason why they were there, because they were going to hear something today that would probably make them think, make them change their mind and whatever they were about to do. And the good news is, well, I heard that next day, actually, on the Sunday of the same weekend, one young man who had been present actually went to church that Sunday. He hadn't been to church for 13, 14 years, and he went to church that Sunday. So who knows? I don't know. I haven't heard anymore.
You didn't say it was because of you, then?
No, I don't know at all. I don't know. But somebody went to church, and I don't know if any others did since then. I don't know. But it's in God's hand, and it really is a miracle. Yeah. Yeah, a miracle.
Wow. So kids need intervention, or they need to be given the chance to listen to adults that you know, care about them. And yeah, it's just they spend too much time together and not enough time actually.
They need being influenced by something to break else. Into it's a cycle.
Yes. Yes.
And it needs something to see what Lydia did. It, she broke into that cycle.
Yeah. And that's spirit.
Yeah, really. Yeah, and it's got to be broken,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Do you feel that churches are equipped enough to actually manage young people with these issues? Like, if all of those young people went to churches, do you feel that actually be able to overcome these issues, or do you think they're not quite going to be accepted or understood as they are?
I don't think that is a problem, that they wouldn't be accepted, but to your first question, I don't think that many other churches are equipped to manage these young people, to really know what it is that they need, how can we help them. And I do think it is a problem in our society and in our churches that we're not really equipped to help these young people to break that cycle.
The church sometimes teaches religion and just, you know, rules. Yeah. And the world that children live in, the youth live in, it's really hard, and they need much more. Yeah. And
it's more about daily life.
And I know lots of children who were brought up in Christian families, but they kind of went away from God because all they heard it was rules, and nobody taught them about relationship with God, about real life, and didn't answer their questions and their fears and concerns and everything.
There needs to be some place where these kids could go to get
and be understood
realistic
by others.
Christianity,
yeah, exactly.
Relevant Christianity. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's another thing that's changed, actually, in this generation. I mean, when I was a kid, I mean, I was not a believer, Jewish background, but I went to about 4 different church youth clubs. Just because they were there, not because I
doing it.
But they were the only ones. But they're not doing it as much now. There used to be places for young people to go to.
Where do you think the anger comes from? Do you think, because personally, I think, do that young man's anger about the whole, about obviously what happened, and do you think that revenge was, and the anger was solely because of that incident, or do you think actually that was almost the pinnacle of a lot of other things?
Yes, I'm sure, because as you said earlier, the family and the broken home culture has so much, because the majority of these youngsters were actually single parent families. So where there is no guidance whatsoever for these children, and this is the only life they know, and it's almost a kind of adrenaline, the excitement. Right. This is our life.
And
this
becomes their family.
Yes, that's
the
right.
Group,
their family. That's
the
right.
Gang becomes their family.
Yes, yes.
And the limited, you know, understanding of their egos and the ego drive.
Quite right. Yes.
They're driven by that ego rather than any guidance.
Is that their total disregard for other people's lives? Yeah. Is that even what? You know, they seem to have an intent sometimes to kill, but do they understand what it actually means? I don't know. It's like,
I think a lot of that is also fear, because I think they feel they're in the same place as whoever else they're dealing with. It's me or them as well.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of fear as well.
Yes.
Fear and ego.
Yeah.
Dangerous mix.
Yes. Why can't the police just... They must know about these gangs. I don't understand why they can't deal with them. Machine guns. I don't mean that. I mean, I don't know.
How would the police deal with them, though?
What?
What is your? What is the?
I haven't got a clue.
It's difficult. It's not just the police's problem, is it?
The difficulty
it's civil disobedience, isn't it?
Well, on the one hand, it's only when it happens.
Yeah.
When they're together, that's not civil disobedience.
The difficulty is, can you prosecute someone for intent or discussion of doing, or do you have to wait? The reality is, you can prosecute someone that's put someone in hospital, but you can't prosecute their 10 friends that have been with them for the last 2 or 3 years talking about it.
Have the police followed up that incident then?
The police, they have been following up the incident. But then again, there's so much, I don't know if I should say it that way, mistrust with the police, that people feel... What's the point? For a lot of people, they think they will inform the police, and for the police, it's just for them to get somebody else in prison. That's for their CV. I've got somebody else in prison. Not so much because they really care about the situation. Now, this is another problem, you see. Yes, that's another problem.
There can never be no like quick fix to it. It's something that has to start at like a grassroots level. And like you said, maybe start these youth groups and somewhere for people to go, like these centres.
You should open up a bit more and have people running youth centres again.
We did that in our last church. Do you remember you were part of it, the Y Club?
That was with Roland.
I've forgotten their names already. Cy and Alison. And it was open just for the local kids.
Right.
And the church kids were there but they were the minority. Right. And we just advertised it just for local kids to come.
Yeah.
And they had a fantastic summer. So, some of them a little bit rough, none of them too rough.
Well, I think it's really important. They've got nowhere to go.
Yeah.
So they're going to hang around in a park together and start mischief.
Yeah.
And drink and whatever else they're going to do.
Yeah. Youth clubs definitely would definitely work, because I know some places around here, there have been like youth things opened up and schemes introduced that have definitely got people going to it and got people off the streets. Yeah. I think it is definitely like boredom, the sort of looking for an identity and sort of finding it in sort of a sort of cool, like gangstery sort of thing, stemming from like America, sort of Bloods and Crips gang sort of thing, warfare. Like, is this publicised a lot and sort of glorified in the media? Well, like in sort of
there must be
television
Christian youth initiatives. I mean, Louis, you might,
well,
you know.
The challenge with Christian youth initiatives is they don't really know what they want to do. The question, what is a church youth group supposed to do? Is it supposed to sell the gospel and win hearts to Jesus by being a very, not overtly Christian, but you know, going to the young people with a message that is ultimately what they need? Or is a youth group supposed to open their doors and just let people come along and have a laugh, and then through relationships, both are interesting. It's working out what they're supposed to do.
If there's somewhere, sorry,
yeah.
I was thinking if they open their doors to local children, and there are older people there, they don't have to be, they don't have to be Bible bashing, but there are people there that can be present when they're having their conversations, or they can have discussions. Yeah. And you know, there can be some more mature thought going to their discussions, giving them ideas that they otherwise wouldn't have. Otherwise, they're just in a little group of their own age group with their own limited understanding of the ego drives and all the other drives that come into being.
What you have to do with these kids, when you strip down all the, through all the layers of their personality, they're just little kids underneath it all, aren't they? Looking for love, looking for, and just trying to get down to that. It needs a really special people that can do that.
Views, you know, them alternative
what it needs
ideas.
A new generation of Christians, what they call them, detached workers, you know, sort of young men who will go out and talk to these gangs and try to sort of, you know, offer solutions. But that's so difficult.
I think having somewhere to go to is really important, because, you know, the old, I don't know if it's biblical, is it? The devil makes work for idle hands, you know. And I think that speaks a lot about what happens there. If they're in a group, in a park, because they've got nowhere to go, or wherever it is they're hanging around, they're going to be drinking, doing a bit of dope, or whatever it is they're doing. And they're going to come up with all sorts of mischievous schemes.
Plus, it's...
But when you get to that point of boredom... You're influenced by what is attractive to, you know, when your culture. Yeah. And for a lot of people, you get kids that get bored and they go skateboarding or start a band.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's trying to move away from that.
So it's the rap culture you're talking about for America.
Well, I don't know.
I don't think those are bad things. I think those are things that are good for young people. You know, those are at least a lot better than...
I don't think the music... It's a bit like the media. The media isn't evil, it's just covering sometimes horrific things. I think with elements of music, with elements of music, with like, you know, R&B and hip hop, it's not that they themselves are the problem, but they are talking about what is relevant to where they're from. They are a reflection of the things that are going. They did not cause these bad things. But they are.
From his book, the lyrics of those groups are glorifying violence. And
I suppose where's the balance between keeping it real, saying what's going on, and making things look positive? Because you can't, so I mean, you can't not mention these things if it's what's happening in your life.
Put all the blame onto the music. You can't blame it on one thing. You can
one genre.
The fundamental.
Well, I expect you three to be defending music. Cause you're all musicians.
Well, I'm defending
can we
music.
Speak
I
to someone who's not a musician?
Yeah, but I know people that listen to the same music.
What about your nephew? Is he into music? I mean, do you think music was a
music,
part?
But I don't think music was a part. I just think it's just the group of friends who hang about together, and it's that street culture, and one thing leads to another.
So how, in an ideal world, how, I've said that twice today, how would a church reach to the young people that you have spent time with, or spent that time with and known, how could you see a church actually helping them sort of turn from elements of what they're getting up to? What would a church need to do to reach those people?
Communicate, engage.
To be fair though, this problem
has only really touched the surface. I mean, it's been brought to our attention by the media maybe the last year, and that's where people have like sat up and noticed. Churches, I think, we need to be given time to react and sort out a system of teaching kids. And I don't know if it, you know, churches should be put under so much pressure because it's a fairly recent story. So I don't know. I mean,
I think that's talking about the specific problem, yeah, maybe knife culture or whatever, but I think there's always been a disaffected youth. And there's always been there, whether there's knives involved or not. Well, there's other forms of trouble. Mm. But I do think that the church has opened their doors just for somewhere for them to go, at very least. Mm. You just know where for them to go.
Yes, you know, I agree with that. It's not just because of the knife and the crime. I think there always has been a problem with church and young people. Young people, they seem not to find the word church attractive or going to church. And I think it's finding some way. Personally, I think some churches go overboard because you can't water down everything just for the sake of getting young people in. Otherwise, we're still not helping them.
Yeah.
So it's just meeting, finding that balance somehow where young people don't see the word church as being something archaic and boring, and somewhere where they genuinely want to go, genuinely want to be a part of.
I think they should know that they're welcome, whatever their background.
Yes.
I mean, Lou was involved with a Sunday church group that grew and grew.
But the basis of it, I mean, but again, we came up with that problem. It's very difficult to manage a group of, you know, it's very easy to run a little church Sunday group with 10 or 11 nice 13-year-old Christian boys and girls. But when you have 30 or 40 people that in no way agree and are basically there because they want somewhere else to go, they bring their issues with them, which is great because it gives you a chance to speak and communicate about them. But it takes a bit of thought and planning because you suddenly have, you know, people coming with their 23-year-old boyfriend and they're 14, their 23-year-old boyfriend's just come out from prison, and you go, right, how do we work this? What do we say to this one? Okay.
How can you set up something that will attract, say, like two rival gangs? I mean,
I think the challenge, though, is giving them a place to be, but also they need that boundaries and structure. You know, what you're saying, you know, watering it down, it's not about watering it down, it's about sort of just keeping, being honest and saying, we will accept you as you are, but there are a few things to follow and do and be, because actually what they need as well as a place to go, is a place to go that has some structure.
Exactly.
Whereas at home they have structure that doesn't work, either because they don't see their parents doing what they say. Mm. And then in a park there is no structure, you just do what you want. Whereas somewhere that's open to them but tells them, you know, look, we're happy for you to be here and we care for you, but when you're here, could you just do this, not quite do so much of that, and
abandon dope, all ye who enter here.
Yeah, that sort of thing. It's, but it is very difficult to manage, isn't it?
It is difficult, and I think it has become even more difficult, as you say, because there are some people who are trying. There are some churches who are trying with this youth club thing, but I think at the moment they're hard. They're very difficult to break away, I think, from what they're used to doing, inviting them to a youth club that's run by church. They still see this church. Yeah. It's that word church, I think, that seems to get in the way somehow, the impression and things that they have.
Do people need to go to them then? Almost like Jesus didn't bring people to the temple. Jesus went out to the streets and spent time there.
I think people that represent those youth things have to go out there and show them. Oh, look,
they have to go somewhere.
But you need to build a friendship first before you can start taking them to places and giving them. You have to sort of actually win their trust and respect to an extent, would you say? Or
But where are you going to meet these? So you've got to go then to the places where they are, in the schools. I mean, I work in school and I would really... It's really difficult working school. I would ideally, if I was the head, I'd invite somebody in to every assembly to talk to youth, but it can't be done somehow. It just can't be done. And I think the church workers need to get into the schools. That's a best place where you can meet the youngsters.
The people meet at the church.
But then how many times a year do they come to each school?
They come to your school.
They do come there. And they have a good impact when they come. But I think it needs to be more regular basis.
Thinking about schools, people coming in and sort of talking to kids, they've got to be a level of respect sort of thing. Because I know the teachers and, like, whenever someone's had problems and the teachers really got through to someone and talked to them about it, the teachers they respect. And it's like there's only a few teachers in my school that are respected by students, and those are the teachers that make the impact and the things that they say. Like, for example, Mr. Torn, who won the award and stuff. He sort of, when he talks about something to the kids, they understand it, and they sort of, they build on it, and they have respect for him, so they listen to him and they sort of go on what he says. So there's got to be a level of respect, and there's got the respect's got to be built up, and it's got to be like the trust, and it's got to be established so the kids can.
Every kid understand has it. To have a positive role model in their lives, and the sad fact is that every kid, there is a potential for every kid to have a positive role model in, you know, one or both of their parents, but. Obviously, we know that parents can't always be there, and especially if it's a one-parent family, there needs to be an alternate role model in the community. And that's, I guess, a lot of kids will not see that and will not have that person that they can see going to church or they can see going to a youth group and think, well, I want to do that as well, because obviously this guy's, he's a cool guy and he goes to these things and let's do that. And so maybe, you know, we need to develop older role models for these kids.
I think also that they need to have these positive role models among their friends, because sometimes the reason why they are not very, they don't like go to church, because they see it as an adult thing, you know, and we've got our Sunday school and you've got your main service. And I, at least from my experience, I see that sometimes they feel just separated and not really involved. I think church need to give them chance to be involved and treat them exactly the same as other adults, because we are all the same, we're all people. And I've been recently at the youth meeting of my friends, and I was really amazed, because all of those, or most of those youth, like 15, 14, 12, 16, 17 years old, they were actually participating. They did, they shared, they prayed, they shared their experience with God, they prophesied, they just, I could say they just live with God. It was just so amazing, because I didn't see St. Andrews. It was Rob from Educational Project, I was amazed that for them it was just obvious thing. It wasn't like adult thing. It was like there were a few adults doing things and they were just sitting there listening or maybe playing something. Mm. But we all felt like, you know, together we're at the same level. And I think it's so important for young people or for children to see that they actually can, you know, do something as well. Because we all need passions in life, and we all need do things, not just hear things, not just, you know, not just know what to do, but we need to have a chance to express ourselves, and to take a part, because then we can feel it's our thing.
I think ultimately the biggest challenge is, you know, the best thing to happen would be for young people to realise the main role model would be Jesus. And the challenge in that is that we have to, remember there's a guy called, I've forgotten his name now, he's called Bill. He lives in New York and he works. Bill Wilson, that's the one. And he said to, he had a bunch of interns. So these are all guys from like America and Europe and the UK. They're all nice, normal Christian kids. And they're going to work in these really rough areas of Brooklyn and stuff like that. And he said, the thing you got to remember is for most of these kids, you'll be the only Jesus they ever see. And he wasn't saying that in a sort of you are their God, but saying you are the closest, unless they actually become a Christian, you are the closest they will ever get to actually seeing Jesus. So we're called to be Christ-like for these guys, in the hope that they, and girls obviously, in the hope that they themselves can have Christ as their main role model. So for us to go out there and do it, our main aim and focus has to be for Jesus, in the hope that they will see that and catch that, and Jesus will be their role model. Because ultimately, you know, there were role models in the 20s and 30s and 40s, but it went wrong. You know, it wasn't just about not having adult role models. It wasn't just about the family. Ultimately, it was the fact that people don't follow God and follow Christ anymore either. That's a pretty big part of it as well.
That's what celebrity is all about. It's
taking the place.
People are looking at different achievements and different things as the main sustenance in life. People want to be on TV, etc.
But this is it. Just going back to the gang culture, there's a lot of those, rappers in America. I mean, they're extremely rich and kids aspire to be like that.
There is an element. I don't know, but I've talked to some people that say, there is an element of. It's an obscure version of the American dream, that you can go through a difficult situation, a difficult life as a kid. There's 50 Cent who says he's been shot. I think the number changed every time, 10 times, 12 times, 100 times, gone to prison all the time. And yet now here he is, financially very successful, multi platinum selling artist. And it's almost as if you can have the 20, 30 years of that lifestyle and eventually there's a light at the end of the tunnel. Yeah. But that's actually not reality. Yeah. And what people need to see is that, he might have done all right, but I'm sure there's thousands and thousands and thousands of his friends that didn't. And also, is he, just because he's been successful doesn't actually mean that his life is how it should be.
Find a good role model in society. Well, and get kids to like Richard for this generation.
I think oh God, don't ever Cliff Richard. I just think that all that needs to happen really is for those that are Christians to act like Christians, because that way if they can see that our focus and our role model is Christ, they'll see our difference, realise our role models are different from their role models, and they'll start realising that Jesus is the one to aspire to get to know and be like and understand. And I think that's where you'll start to see real breakthrough and change on a cultural level, as opposed to just people sorting out their lives a bit and going back to college or whatever it is. I mean, that's where the big changes start to happen. But how we get there, that's, I think, an individual thing as well as a church thing.
Attitudes need to change, I think, and what churches are prepared to do and the lengths they're prepared to go, I think, and a bit of courage, I think they need to...
And approachability from churches, I think, to be not that distant...
To understand
that is the character.
A brave church that wants to take on this culture and reach out to it, isn't it, really?
But at the same time, it's what every church is called to do.
Yeah, I know, but they're not. But
in every area. Mm. Yeah.
It's almost good to just have a special centre. Like in Poland, we both were volunteering for a youth centre run by our church, and it was a very tough area. Lots of broken families, alcoholism, and everything you can imagine. And so we started like a after-school youth centre just for them to have a place to come and help with homework and run different workshops. And lots of those kids were really tough children, primary school. So, but so hard to work, but we had to believe in them, that there is good in them. It's not just our, difficult children, bad behavior. And we had situation when they came with knife and they fight against each other. It was, and we were responsible for them. What could we do? But it's been 2 years, I think, and you can see changes in those kids. Yes. Just first of all, because they had place to go and somebody believed in them and gave them relationship, just took care of them, because most of the parents just didn't care, poor families as well. The second thing, because we also preach gospel and we made it, obvious we are Christians, but we felt we have to give them both. We can't just tell them nice things about Jesus, because they needed practical things. Like some of them needed food, were really hungry after school. And it's actually very encouraging and amazing how they got on. And recently few of them went to Christian festival and gave their life to Jesus. And now we can see there is really, because it's a complex thing, it's really not easy. If you've got a kid who's got a problem at home, and you give him those few hours, but then he gets back home and situation's the same, we can't change it. It's really work, not just in kids but in families as well, and we have to think about everything. Yeah. if we really want to make difference, it's not easy thing.
No. But the thing is, for me as well, in the sense of that you really want to listen to them, what they want to say, what they feel. And I remember once there was a boy and he did something wrong and he ran away and I went to talk with him and he didn't know what I want. What do you expect, girl? He's like, I just want to talk with you. Why you did that? How you feel about this? And I was like, are you insane? He absolutely didn't know what's my intention. Because
like
never,
that.
Ever, yeah. Nobody talk with him and ask him what he feels, what he wants in life. Nothing. Mm-hmm. Nobody. If he did something wrong, he was punished. That's it. That's it. That's all. You know, you're always bad. You're always the wrong one. You have no rights and yeah. things like that. Mm-hmm. There are, you know, 12, 13 years children with some idea and, you know, experience in life. Yeah. And you need to respect this first
and
when you start to talk.
Yeah.
And that's what we start to talk about hip-hop, and I don't know how it's here in England, but I love this culture in Poland.
Right.
It's violent, of course. And the lyrics that they have sometimes is violent. But I would call this poetry of new century.
Right.
Because
yeah.
they express themselves really what is the reality around.
Yeah.
And the identity. They're looking for identity.
That's true.
And what
yeah.
and the church, like Kasia said, the church is giving them rules. And maybe for me, the question is, what is the church today?
Yeah.
Is it the religion thing that we should join, or is it something powerful? When you said you start to pray, they start to maybe not cry, but there was touch really. It was powerful. They're looking for power. They're looking for something. What is real? What
yes.
is real? Not that I will go and preach them and say, you should leave this, 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 and this. You should leave. You shouldn't be violent. You should be a nice boy. I work in a nursery, and I hate that when I should say, oh, you're a good boy. Well done. And what means good boy? Good,
yeah.
boy means that Johnny will sit all the time and will make not troubles.
Yeah.
Will not
yeah.
cry, will eat nicely and play together with all the friends nicely. Is it a good boy?
Yes.
I don't think so. I don't want to have children like that. I don't want to have the new generation like that.
No.
And when you have the guys from gangs, why they are there? I mean, of course they have no place to go. But if I should choose my powerful friends with some ideas, with, you know, purpose in their life, and then boring youth club. Sorry, I wouldn't go to the youth club.
Yeah.
I would go to people that really
stimulate.
Want to listen to me, want
yeah.
to be with me. And if something will happen, how many leaders will stand behind them if something really happened?
Mm.
How many friends will stay behind them if something happened? In the hospital, all the guys they came, they stood with him.
Yeah,
how many
yeah.
Christian, how many friends from your church
yeah.
will stay with you and behind you if something happens?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing, that
yeah.
people just need identity and really deep relationship friends and purpose that is really powerful.
Mm-hmm.
That's what happened actually in this youth club in Poland there. Because the children really, they came. In the beginning, there was just fight. All the time was fight and the people was the responsible. Sometimes they was in trouble. We had police and stuff like that. But then after that, the children, if they had problems, they run to the club. They want
right.
to talk with the teachers there.
Yes.
And the teachers, they come home. And there was a situation that one girl was living with her grandma and grandpa. And one day, grandma decided to kill her grandpa.
Oh, really?
it was neighborhood like that. It was neighborhood like that, yeah?
Yes.
So it was a really tough situation. He wasn't a nice grandpa, okay? And there was a, like, 10 years old girl, and she was watching all this. The 10 years in her life, she was watching this situation, and finally she saw grandpa in a knife in his stomach, you know, in his belly, whatever
yeah.
you say. So the first thing when she came to the club, she came next day to the club, and the one person that she wanted to talk about this, it wasn't police or some specialist or something, it was the teacher from this club.
Right.
She opened her heart and she wanted to be there, and she wanted to cry with her to coming there. So she felt, okay, that's my place, that's my people,
that's
I'm going
right.
to my people.
Yeah.
I don't know, it's or the hip-hop generation is using this here, but in Poland you call it my people. They're my
yes,
people,
it's her family.
My crew.
Yeah.
So that's my family, you know.
Yeah.
But I think that's what I expect in the church. I don't expect to go there on a Sunday. I don't have to go on Sunday
no.
to church, actually. That's what I expect. I expect a life of Christianity that is really powerful, and everything what I read in the Bible is true. And
yes.
Jesus is not the nice guy, you know, hippie look with blue eyes. That's not the person. Because this is what I thought of my life. That's Jesus. Come on, it's cheesy. I don't want that. And if I should go to some gangster and tell him, oh, Jesus loves you, he will see the hippie guy. Like, okay.
You know?
And the Jesus that really came, it was the Jesus that came upon them there in the hospital. Yeah, I was the real one, not the picture.
Absolutely.
You know. Yeah. Sorry for taking so much time. I get so emotional about this.
Yeah. It's all about being relevant. And, and real.
That's the Christ.
It's not plastic. Not plastic.
But to bring that Christ, bring that Christ to people, we have to individually as Christians, especially any young Christians, have to believe that themselves.
Yeah.
You know,
the alternative has to be appealing. If you're going to give them an alternative, and they have to see it in you first, because you're offering the alternative, and then they look at you and they think, well, what? What is it that you're? What are you talking about? So, Johnny, how do you find it as a youngster? Because I think that's another problem. How do the youngsters who are in the church relate to other youngsters?
Well, me personally, what do you mean, like to non-believers? And
yes.
Well, I've taken it upon myself to sort of talk to everyone about Jesus, really. But I think the main sort of Jesus that appeals to people is sort of the Jesus that went into the temple and would throw up the tables and sort of the powerful Jesus, rather than the one which is just loving and sort of, even though both are parts of him and they're both amazing, the parts that are the powerful that can really save people's lives are what appeals to people the most. I feel, it really does affect people's lives and it makes them think about stuff.
That thing, I heard a guy preaching, T.D. Jakes, was saying, you know, love, the love of God is so important, but love without power is like, you can be loved by someone that has no power, and ultimately, it's nice
secure,
that you know, he linked it. You know, he said, you know, have you ever, you know, when you were younger, you dated someone that said they loved you, but there was no power behind it, and then you meet someone real that really loves you, and the power behind that,
exactly.
You know, and it's matching that, the love of God with the power, the fact that God's, you know, he does have that power behind him. He does have that love that's much greater. It's not a fleeting, small little love. It's a power that will go in.
Not puppy.
Exactly. It's a love that will go into a temple, turn tables, and get angry.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the love that we need to show. You know, love that's strong, that intense.
It's not like it's at least God loves you. At least Jesus loves you. It's wow, Jesus loves you. You've really got it on your side, sort of thing.
Yeah. What are the things that people come up against, you know, because obviously it's easy to talk about Christ in church or with Christians or as a group of Christians to some young people, but if you're on your own with someone at school or whatever, having a chat and this subject comes up, what are usually the things that they say to you negatively? You know, what are the criticisms or what are the challenges?
Well, most of it is just sort of the sciencey sort of side, the way they've been taught, the logic and... Like, just to totally dismiss it, is that the fact it's been ridiculed so much. You know what I mean? It's like, rather than just the concept of the love and the acceptance and the being born again, what they have the struggle with is what they've been completely taught, the fundamental...
That's what the media's grabbed.
Yeah, it's the fact that it's almost laughable to think about that there might be a God to them. That you just got to sort of drum that out of their head to sort of show that, well, you respect me and I believe in all that.
Do you see young people that have been turned off from Christianity because of maybe Christians that you know that haven't actually acted out their faith?
Yes. I'll say that 100%, yes. Basically, I go to a Christian school and pretty much most say they're Christians, but pretty much most of them aren't believing, aren't born again, and a lot of them are totally against it. Because of the fact they've been indoctrinated and sort of, it's not been shown the real side of Christianity, just been shown the, let's sit and sing hymns now, and then you have to come to church and you have to be quiet for this, and it's sort of an establishment thing.
That aspect, as Johnny says, is the way the media has ridiculed Christianity as well, and that needs to be dealt with as well. Yeah, science has disproved Christianity. There's not enough Christian witness that actually fights against that.
And you have representatives on, say, a TV show discussing it.
The
representatives are always
airy-fairy,
like semi-Christians.
Someone obscure in that obviously isn't quite.
Yeah.
Do you think, because I've got a friend of mine that I work at the radio station up in Lincoln with, and he's always been very anti-Christian, very anti. And he started to get to know, and I was like, if you're anti, you're anti. It's not me you're going to have a problem with, to be honest. Ain't me you're going to have to explain it to, so I'd have no problem with him. But like, after maybe working with him 3 or 4 months, he turned around, and we were just talking about it, and he told me when he first started to have a problem with it, and it was when he was about 17 or 18, and his girlfriend cheated on him with a guy that was a Christian, that knew the whole situation and knew that he was going out with her and still continues to be a Christian and is now at some Bible college. Now, that's not saying, you know, the guy might have genuinely repented and is now at Bible college doing a similar thing. But how can you see there how a small act, a 17-year-old going out with a girl, you know, and everyone makes mistakes, but that act it was something that switched this guy against faith for 4 or 5 years. And only now is he starting to actually open up and talk about it. Yeah. I obviously don't know names, but do you see elements of that with young people saying they're Christians and actually living in a way that in no way...
Basically, I sort of had a little think about it. And when we have sort of church services in school, there's a communion aspect sort of thing. And I see who goes up and takes communion. And I know... what goes on behind closed doors, sort of thing.
I know what you're repenting of.
But it's like, I've the people that take communion, I've never even heard them talk about anything to do with... I've never seen anything in their lifestyle, any way they've spoken out about it. And I sort of think, are you really a Christian? Are you? And I talk to them about it and sort of... I say, yeah, well, I suppose my parents, sort of, we go to church sometimes and... I go to the youth group now and then, and it's like, yeah, but that doesn't really make you a Christian, does it?
Just doing it out of habit.
Well, yeah, sort of thing.
Or superstition.
It's the either ones that rebel against it or the ones that just sort of take it.
And let's face it, I mean, for kids also, it's not exactly cool to be a Christian.
It doesn't look exciting from the outside, and I think it's taken... And I think it's starting to get more not appealing. I'm not sort of saying you got to paint it up to make it look different. Just show the actual real benefits of it.
The reality isn't
the boringness. It is so exciting. It's powerful.
Absolutely.
It's just that the ambassadors are not very excited.
The reason why young people, I don't think, always necessarily get with the Christian faith isn't because it needs to be painted up and rejigged to make look more interesting. What it needs a lot of the rubbish taken away. It's not that you need to... What they're doing is, imagine if you've got one thing, it's then being covered up by a load of rubbish. And so what the church... is trying to excite what's already
boring.
What they need to do is they just need to remove it and just have the heart of it. And that doesn't need tarting up or exciting.
The thing that gets me upset, is just very cynical, is about this time of every year, the church pays a lot of money to advertising agencies to think of new ways of bringing people into church for Christmas.
Right.
But the product's always the same. Because once you're in the church, it's the same boring place. But they're spending fortunes in new exciting techniques, new slogans, whatever. It's just a waste of money.
The reality is, Christianity would have all the followers of the every. I have no doubt that in many ways, 99.9% of the planet could be Christian if those that went to church and said they were Christians acted like it and lived it exactly how the Bible said it. If it did, every church would increase by 50% in about 20 years, no problem. If everyone in that church, in every church...
Yeah. And it does in certain types of parts of the world.
Yeah. I mean,
where there's revivals, and it's not around here, and it's not Western world.
And it comes from that. It comes from that following, And that revival, what you're talking about, it's simple as that. It's when a church turns around and goes, right, let's do this properly. And that's when... God's
but this is always going
released.
To be the problem, though, isn't it? That's what we're fighting against all the time. So how? When will it change? How will it change? Will it
start? It starts
by bit.
People.
Yeah, I think it starts doesn't it?
Yeah. Let's start a church now. Them,
yeah. The founding members. Who's Jesus? Who's...
But what is church? It's about relationship. That's what church is about. Yeah. It's not about building. And
I think there should be a new word for church. But I mean, I know it's been sort of reinvented, but like, you know, think of church, think of a building, you think of a map with a little cross where a spire would be or something like that. When essentially it's a community, it's something you don't have to do, because if you think about what it is, you sort of need it and you require it and you thirst for it, sort of thing. It's like something you can't live without. But the way it's been painted up, I've only realised this a few months ago, that church is such a beneficial thing. But I've always thought of it as just a sort of worry, just that I have to go on Sunday.
In the Acts, the first mention of the word church is in relation to people, not building.
Eddie Izzard delivers a classic line, which is basically saying church, and it's not really he then goes into the stand-up, but the basic point he says is church is a hobby for older people. And it's true, but it's true. It's not. If it was a passion for older people, that would do. But the reality is, it's not. It's just a hobby for. And that's what we've got to get out of.
Keeps them off the streets. Can you imagine if there was no church? All the old people.
Yeah, would they look out into knife crime?
But I think it depends what church. I just want to say that the church I've been in Poland had. No old people.
Really?
Which, yeah. Yeah, yeah, the oldest one was maybe 30 years old.
We're talking about Church of England.
Yeah.
But it was, I think it's because it just started with four young crazy people who just felt that they should meet together, and one of them were like mature Christian, rest of them really crazy. But he just felt that he wants to start something with them. It's not about the place of maturity we are, but also our heart, and they really wanted something. And now there's like 50 people in this church in 6 years, and it's most of them now they're getting more old people because they realize we need to make space also for old people because, you know, I think the other problem that
maturity,
you know, all the
problem, they need clubs for old people, right?
Exactly. And they had like, you know, 80 years old grandma who came to group run by 25 years old guy, and she gave life to Jesus just 1 year before she died, which was quite amazing. And but it's not about, you know, this is church for young people, this is church for all, church should be for everybody. Absolutely. And we have to have a space because we need each other. I think it's such a sad thing when there's, you know, this fight between generations. And there is.
It does happen.
Yeah, it does happen. But church, that's what we have to do. We have to realize we need each other. I'm quite happy being Clayhorn in terms that I've got old people. I've never had it in my Christian life. Yeah. And I can learn from them as well. Yeah. So... Yeah.
But on the other hand, they need to allow the young people to
start. Exactly, yeah. So this is the both sides. That's a problem in
every church.
And children as well,
So I remember in our old church, they used to say, you know, when the kids used to go out from Sunday school, and a lot of them were saying, you know, the kids are not the church of tomorrow, they're still the church of today.
Mm.
That's right.
And we always think of the kids as, oh, they're in the next generation. Let's stick them in a ghetto while we do the real thing. They should be with us. You know?
Because the kids going out, it got to be built up. They can't just be thrown into the deep end sort of thing. And especially, I think I would still go out with kids and go to a Sunday school.
Well, it depends what's being offered.
If
sermons weren't so boring.
That's
the problem.
Yeah, but it's below 20 years old, 19, 18.
Services to still be part of the church.
Yeah, exactly.
I think they
can
have their
teaching can
things,
be.
Yeah. But
it's
still
the same teaching.
Church is really a multi-generational thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
But they each have their different levels of understanding and teaching.
Well, it's that thing. I really should. The thing with Paul talks, you know, when I was a child, I ate. You know what a child eats. And he's distinguishing there. You know that, you know, there is difference as you age. And you know, I know he's talking about faith and how, you know, now he's older, he wants to, you know, gain a real understanding of Christ. But you know, I do think, you know, services. I've been to all age services, and they're a bit obscure because the children every so often have to zone out for 3 or 4 minutes because they're talking adult stuff, and the adults are sitting there feeling patronised because they're sitting there. With some bloke dressed up like an idiot holding a big sign that says Jesus is love, and thinking, yes, I know this. And it's just like, it never quite hits both audiences quite right.
Well, someone's and, always going to feel alienated.
You've got to have togetherness and community. That's what worship is for. I remember a plumber friend of mine, actually, in a van. One of the wisest things I've ever... No, he's not, actually. One of the wisest things I've ever heard him say Well, the wise things I ever heard him say, he said, one of the best things about worship is it's one of the few times when a bunch of people will all be saying the same thing in the same time, hopefully in harmony. You know, and I think that's, you know, that's where the community comes from. It's from the worship. But actually, teaching-wise, you know, you can distinguish age-wise between teaching, because, you know, a six-year-old might not be at a point to understand the doctrine of hell and judgment, whereas, you know, a 45-year-old might need to hear it. Some kids do, yeah.
You've got more than the adults.
It's true. I suppose it's just you've got to get the balance, haven't you? But people have to. Everyone has to be reached to individually.
Yeah.
But by the same church with the same focus.
Yeah.
It's being aware, as you say, of the individual. Because we all sitting here, we're all Christians, but we all, as we've heard, we've all have our different individual needs, our different ways of looking at it. And as you say, it is finding that. Right, balance, what we've been trying to do for years and years
I think we'll never get there then.
Well, not until right there. I think the whole problem with the fall is that we fell out into the attempt to try and balance everything.
Yeah.
Whereas before it was God did all the balancing.
I don't think that's an excuse to not try.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Yes, we'll never get it perfect, but God's going to be pretty annoyed if he comes down and says we didn't even make a start. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's right.
I think you've just got to get, if you individually have a passion for young people, and then that's enough, you know, stick with God, stick with your faith, and then research, look, and see how you can impact your local community. You don't have to change the world, you don't have to go, you know, one thing I learned, you know, I don't have to go over to New York to change anything, I don't need to go to Brixton, I just need to stay in my little town in Lincoln, because believe it or not, until recently, I didn't realise that one of the mates I worked with at radio station, he's about 14, his cousin got put in hospital from knife crime. This is in Lincoln. Lincoln is famous for sheep, and that's about it. And even they have knife crime. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Well, the sheep.
No, we're not.
Oh, they're
vicious sheep. Like, that's
you
all.
Walk past them and go, it's really intimidating.
But no, you just need to focus
the sheep,
on
the sheep pens have postcodes.
You just need to focus on where you are and what you can do and stuff.
Yes, that's true. That. Don't endeavour, as you say, to change the world because, as you say, it's you in your bit doing what you can in your corner and knowing where God has placed you. Because, as I say, I'm in a school and I think I'm in a wonderful place. I have wonderful opportunities to reach out to children in my own way, to reach out to children. And it's for each of us to know what we can do. Just where we are, and do it with passion, and let the children see that you do have